Welcome to Fronteras, a program that explores issues at the border and beyond through the lens of arts, culture, and history. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. U.S. Customs and Border Protection reported over 164,000 migrant encounters in October. Almost 92,000 were rapidly expelled under the Public Health Order Title 42. Were they apprehended because they were crossing into the U.S. illegally? Not necessarily so. Many of these migrants were seeking asylum. Asylum is legal in the U.S., but rapid expulsion due to a controversial pandemic response at the border is denying individuals from even obtaining a credible fear interview. A Democratic member of the U.S. House has introduced a piece of legislation that takes a step towards improving, modernizing, and humanizing the asylum process. El Paso Congresswoman Veronica Escobar introduced House Resolution 5618, the Reimagining Asylum Processing Act. Some provisions of the legislation include the establishment of humanitarian processing centers, limiting the presence of immigration personnel at such centers, and ensuring access to interpreters and legal counsel for asylum seekers. Escobar says she wrote the legislation after consulting with immigration advocates and legal experts.
I have been an immigrant rights advocate for almost 30 years of my life now. And living on the U.S.-Mexico border, I have seen the evolution in the different people and different circumstances surrounding migrants arriving at our nation's front door in my community of El Paso, Texas. And we have seen now for the last several years more and more families and vulnerable populations arriving at our nation's front door seeking asylum, which, as you pointed out, is legal. It is part of our legal immigration system. And here's how I would frame this bill, this piece of legislation for Americans who just see a complicated, broken web of laws and processes. And they're right. We have a complicated web that is very broken of different laws and processes. But right now, when someone who is seeking asylum arrives at our port of entry, they're rejected. They're told that they cannot seek asylum at our ports. And that's why we have been seeing for years now migrants going between ports, walking up to Border Patrol agents, turning themselves in, seeking asylum. The current system essentially creates a situation of severe mission creep for Border Patrol agents. They apprehend these asylum seekers. They take them to processing centers where they are held sometimes for hours, sometimes for days. Under the Trump administration, we saw them being held for weeks in what is a detention-like circumstance. Border Patrol agents then are tasked with essentially watching over families and children, feeding them, providing them with medicine, taking them to their showers, giving them fresh clothing. This, I will tell you, in my view, is not just mission creep, but the current state of affairs makes our country less safe. So what I am offering is an alternative. Get those Border Patrol agents back to the jobs and the roles that they should be playing, that they were trained for. And instead of a facility that is run by law enforcement with a gun and a badge, we would turn that into a humanitarian processing center so that individuals seeking asylum would have access to USCIS, to lawyers, to NGOs, in sort of a wraparound services facility that would truly help move the asylum process along in a way that preserves our human dignity and keeps us safe.
What kind of infrastructure might already be in place to allow that to happen?
We already have some processing centers on the border, but I am calling for more and for more funding to ensure that we are able to process asylum seekers in a way that I believe the law truly intended, where they have true due process, where they have access to legal counsel, where they have time to provide their credible fear interview. But here's the important component of my legislation, the additional important component. We would not keep folks essentially physically at the border, you know, once they have been processed. The vast majority of people seeking asylum have a family member, a spouse, a child, a parent. And so what my bill would do is allow the asylum seeker to go be with their sponsor, and their sponsors are all over the United States of America, let them be with their sponsor, where their sponsor would be responsible for their housing, their food, et cetera. They would be there using alternatives to detention, and they would undergo an asylum hearing with immigration judges in their region. And that would basically stop the role of the border as being a place that essentially just holds folks for long periods of time. We've got to do a better managing, and this bill would help with that. I have spoken with individuals seeking asylum in ICE facilities who've been held for over a year, people with no criminal history, no criminal record, and who are seeking asylum. It is not a consistent process for people, and it shouldn't be that way. We need to have a consistent process, and it's clear it's got to be written into law.
Democratic Congresswoman Veronica Escobar represents El Paso in the U.S. House of Representatives. She's the author of H.R. 5618, the Reimagining Asylum Processing Act. Still to come, we continue our conversation with Escobar. And later, a young singer has been practicing for years with a goal of performing at the annual Mariachi Vargas competition.
It's almost like a Mexican version of American Idol, but for mariachi. Like that's how big it is.
That's next on Fronteras. Welcome back to Fronteras. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio. Immigration reform is a topic widely talked about by politicians, but is realistically difficult to accomplish. Lawmakers on both sides of the aisle have tossed reforms back and forth for decades with little space for compromise. The last major effort to reform immigration law came in 1986 under President Reagan, when the Immigration Reform and Control Act made it illegal to hire or recruit immigrants living illegally in the U.S. The law also extended amnesty to over 2 million undocumented migrants in the U.S. Because there's no solid effort to reform immigration law in the U.S., presidents issue executive orders on immigration that stand on shaky legal ground because there's no solid law on which to act. These executive orders, particularly in the previous administration, resulted in travel bans, limitations on immigrant visas, child separation, and the rapid expulsion of asylum seekers. Democratic Congresswoman Veronica Escobar represents El Paso in the U.S. House of Representatives. She authored H.R. 5618, the Reimagining Asylum Processing Act. She says coming to a compromise on immigration reform is a complicated road and can't be fixed simply by building a wall or militarizing the border.
It's going to be really tough because most lawmakers, and in fact, most Americans probably believe that if you can just be tough at the border, you will stop migration. And when you look at what's happened over the last several years, there should be no doubt that nothing could be further from the truth. In fact, when you look at places where apprehensions are up, I'll give you Yuma, Arizona as an example, or the Arizona sector rather as an example, there's a wall there. That hasn't stopped migration because apprehensions there are high. When you look at the use of policies, Trump era policies like family separation, one of the cruelest, most inhumane policies ever imagined, that didn't stop migration. Title 42 hasn't stopped migration. Remain in Mexico hasn't stopped migration. But lawmakers, Republican lawmakers especially, want to use these as sort of a deterrent. Well, it doesn't work. What we need instead is a multifaceted approach. And I will tell you, my bill is only one component of what needs to happen. We need to have an administration, and we finally do, that is willing to work with hemispheric partners to find shared solutions, to share this obligation that we have in our hemisphere of migration, and to address root causes. Vice President Harris is working on that. I had a great conversation with the White House about a Western Hemispheric annual summit to focus on migration, where we emerge with a framework of shared solutions, shared obligations, shared opportunities. Another component, and this is on Congress, we've got to open up legal pathways if we want to put a dent in irregular migration. We also need to invest in our ports so that our ports can have the capacity to take in asylum seekers so that they're not seeking asylum between ports. There is a long list of work that we need to do. This bill is one component of it. And I am working on trying to address that long checklist of what needs to be done and present it to the American public in as simple a way as possible, but also with the understanding that this is going to be tough and it's going to take time. But if we don't do this, then we are only going to see those videos of desperate individuals at our nation's front door continue to be on our TV sets. And we're going to see more and more families continue to arrive until we finally address this strategically once and for all. My bill on its own is not going to address everything that needs to be addressed. It's one component of what has to be a multifaceted plan. That's why addressing root causes and working with hemispheric leaders needs to be central to everything that we do. What we saw under the prior administration was a president that chose to strong arm our neighbors, bully them, threaten them, instead of working collaboratively and diplomatically with them. And so we've got to work together in this hemisphere, because folks will travel through different countries in order to get to the United States of America. And I'll give you an example of where I feel like these hemispheric partnerships and an annual summit can really help with some solid solutions. A couple weeks ago, I met with the ambassador to Honduras, and we had a conversation about all of the Haitians that were in Honduras waiting to travel to the United States. And he said, you know, if we had more financial support from the United States, you know, we might be able to offer asylum to many of those Haitian migrants, because we see migration through the lens of an opportunity, but we need help. And so, of course, all of this takes time. It's not going to turn on a dime. It's not going to happen overnight. That's why we have to start ensuring that the public knows how tough this is. And because for 4 years, the focus was cruelty as a deterrent, and because for 4 years, the strategy was to bully our neighbors, we have a lot of ground to make up.
Well, I have to commend you for focusing on compassion on this bill, because I think that's something that is lacking in the conversation about immigration. You're from El Paso. You've always talked about the work that's going on behind the scenes to help support the people who are seeking asylum and who are in dire need on the border. You know, I'm from El Paso, too. So, you know, these counter arguments about the lawless, dangerous border is offensive to me as well. The narrative that's being broadcast on traditional media and even in right-wing media, which has been really putting forth that awful argument of invading migrants on the border.
We really do have to do that. And we have to tell the truth about the border. You know, frequently these families and these individuals are painted as a direct threat, meant to be feared, meant to be hated. And then, of course, there are those who take advantage of the fear and the anger in the hearts of some Americans. They exploit it, they feed it. And of course, we know that tragedy comes from that. And it moves us further and further away from real solutions. And we can get there. We absolutely can think about migration and immigration using humanity and focusing on solutions. It's not impossible. We've just really lost our way as a country. And, you know, I'm hoping that in every conversation that we have about immigration, we continue to reinstall the humanity and, remind people of the vulnerability and just the fact that unless we are Native Americans, every single one of us is a descendant of immigrants.
Democratic Congresswoman Veronica Escobar represents El Paso in the U.S. House of Representatives. She authored H.R. 5618, the Reimagining Asylum Processing Act. Read the text of the bill on TPR.org. A young San Antonio singer has been honing his skills for years for a challenge taking place this weekend. TPR's arts and culture reporter Jack Morgan reports on his journey.
We walked by the practice rooms at the University of Texas at San Antonio's music school, where young people rehearse alone and together. We finally found a quiet place to talk.
Good morning. My name is Osvaldo Chacon, and I am a third-year student here at the University of Texas at San Antonio.
What's his primary instrument? This one.
Me voy a amor.
I started singing since I was like 5 years old. I started singing mariachi music, and now I'm a full-time musician. I do all types of music, but I started with mariachi.
Born and raised in Del Rio, the 20-year-old set his sights on singing early on. And in a very real sense, it was therapeutic for him.
When I was younger, I had some difficulty with, like, speaking. Yeah, it was very challenging for me. However, for some reason, singing always came natural to me.
Singing seemed to flow easily out of Chacon, but learning the discipline and structure of music came a little later.
In sixth grade was when I started having the opportunity to, like, be enrolled in, with music. I started with the band, actually. I was actually a tuba player, you know, and all through middle school, all through high school, I did tuba, I did the marching band.
Playing the tuba taught him sight reading, breath control, and the discipline that playing with others does. Then one day, his band director came to him with a thought to consider.
He was like, hey, you know, we need some singers for the varsity group. You know, I'd like for you to, you know, come to rehearsals and sing with us.
Like many schools in South Texas, his in Del Rio offered mariachi classes. Being a seventh grader invited to sing with his older peers was thrilling.
It was scary. It was really scary, but I did it.
Then he began singing outside of school.
We created this ensemble, and we got to perform all summer long at weddings, quinceañeras.
Then in his junior year, he made another change.
I joined choir, and that really just changed my life.
While his love of singing choir is apparent, also apparent is his love of mariachi, which affords more of his interpretation. His favorite song, Sabor a Mi. Here, he gives us a slice of it.
Tanto tiempo disfrutamos de este amor. Nuestras almas se acercaron tanto así que yo guardo tu sabor, pero tú tienes también sabor a mí.
If you're not a Spanish speaker, here's what he was singing.
So the translation to that is, so much time that we lived together, that our lives got so connected and we love each other so much, so much that I still have your essence. That's what that song is all about.
At the moment, his sights are set on one thing in particular. Those to whom mariachi is the be-all and end-all look to San Antonio every fall for an amazing competition built around mariachi's supergroup, Mariachi Vargas. The competition is called the Mariachi Vargas Extravaganza.
It's almost like a Mexican version of American Idol, but for mariachi. Like, that's how big it is. I was very fortunate to be chosen into the 11 finalists that will be competing Saturday, December 4th.
In the world of mariachi, one figure looms largest, star of radio, TV, and movies, Pedro Infante. His granddaughter, Lupita, has continued in the family tradition.
And I just found out yesterday that Lupita Infante will not only be at the competition, but she's going to be judging the vocal competition. When I found this out yesterday, I went crazy.
Can he win it?
I really hope I get the opportunity to, you know, at least be in the top three, but I would love to win the competition. And I'm going to do the best that I can.
Here's the tape he submitted that landed him a finalist position. The pressure of the competition is pretty staggering, and he knows that it's all on his shoulders. That said, the weight of the responsibility is spread around a bit.
If my mother's listening to this, I just want to say that I love her. I love her to death. She's my everything. She's my number one supporter. So I love you, Mom. But one thing that she told me was that no matter what happens in life, it's not me, it's God. It's God presenting to me the opportunities. But again, I have to work hard.
That he has done. I'm Jack Morgan in San Antonio.
Thanks for joining us this week on Fronteras. You can find the show online at tpr.org and wherever you get your podcasts. Fronteras is produced by Norma Martinez. Our executive producer is Dan Katz. Our digital content producer is Bree Kirkham. Our editor is Fernando Ortiz Jr. Charanga Cakewalk composed our theme music. I'm Norma Martinez with Texas Public Radio in San Antonio.